Hey, welcome in, everybody. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. I'm sure that's going to confuse everyone's favorite prep writer, Mr. Johnny O.
Yeah.
John Osier.
I do press my days. This National Signing Day brings back a lot of memories.
You've got an hour and 4 minutes before you declare.
That's right. I'm declaring at 11:05.
Are you a lean right now? A heavy lean? What are you? Soft verbal?
I got four or five hats in my bag, and I'm ready to shock the world, baby.
Would you, if your son, is he in college already?
No, he'll be in college next year.
I knew he was in that range. If he had the opportunity, would you encourage him to go with the full-on performance at the table with the hats and the what?
It would probably depend on his personality. I mean, it was so different when I covered it back in the day. I mean, this was, you know, 90 to 93 when I covered it. So you didn't have, you had interest, but there wasn't the avenue for this sort of, you know, Twitter coverage. So even with the newspaper, I was able to break some stories on signing day morning. Some kids, I remember James Collins, who was a basketball player here in town, went to FSU. He had very little interest in having a big press conference. So I drove over to Jackson High School one day, and he said, "I'm going to FSU," and I wrote the story. There were other kids who I covered, you know, kids. He's coach at Jackson now, but there were other people that I covered who, had it been in this day and age, would have wanted the big show. I think it depends on personality.
Maybe and on ESPNU.
If the kids want to do it, I mean, you know, it's fun. I assume some of these kids don't have perspective on it. Some do. But if they, I think it's fun. If they want to do it, if they want the moment in the sun, what's the harm?
Yeah, whatever the first hat coming out of the bag is, you're not going there. All right.
We've
got that part pretty much figured out. That's what the next level will be, though, where they'll eliminate the one on the table right in front of you, and they'll sweep all the rest of them off at the end and go, ha-ha, I was kidding. It's coming, because they've covered just about every angle of it right now.
Yeah, and it's I've always told people, again, I covered it. I'm a dinosaur. There was no internet when I covered recruiting. There was competition among radio stations, and there was competition, you know, but it wasn't where you had a player coming out and committing on Twitter, and then 3 hours later reversing field, and then him getting the absolute reaction off the tweet, and people cussing him one way or the other. I mean, I assume for these players, that has changed the dynamic and made it that much tougher.
So, you didn't have nearly as many early enrollees. Practically no early enrollees, and even
remember,
early
Eric
commitments.
Zier, I think, went to Georgia and started in the spring, if my memory serves.
Which was a huge
at the
deal
time,
back then.
In the 3 or 4 years that I was doing it, that's the only one I remember. I think it started happening more. It seems like maybe Doug Johnson did it at Florida. My memory is really fuzzy. It started happening more, but you certainly never had the commitment. You would start getting commitments roll in if signing day was February 1st. You'd start getting them roll in maybe January 10th-ish. But there was never a deal where all fall a guy was committed to Florida all fall. The recruiting classes, when you started your lists in the newspaper in early January, we're all at zero. Now, there were guys who you assumed, who you always heard.
Sure.
Like we were talking before the show, Derek Brooks and Marquette Smith, the year they came out.
Yeah.
You started hearing really early on that Derek was probably going to FSU. Marquette, you heard, I remember, from day one, FSU. But they didn't have their orals yet. They usually started that once they took their visits. That's when you would usually hear about the commitments back then. Now, the coaches at the schools, you would sometimes hear whispers from them, hey, it looks like this guy's going here. But you wouldn't have this list like you do now of, I mean, now during the fall, I hear them talk on TV, this school's got 12 verbal commitments already. Nothing ever like that.
Well, now you've got it where before some guys' junior seasons even start,
right,
you know where they're going. If it holds up,
and there was
up,
never
at
anything
least
close to that. But you also had fewer, significantly fewer, and again, I sound like a dinosaur, back in my day, but
well, you are.
Yeah. You had very few incidents of kids flip-flopping at the end. I mean, it would happen, but it was rare.
You didn't have that many flip-flopping because you still probably, percentage-wise, didn't have all that many committed ahead of time. You know, I remember signing days following it when, you know, Bobby Bowden was a great closer, and he would bring in a dozen guys on National Signing Day and get them, and you weren't sure where they were going prior to that.
It wasn't quite that number when I was doing it. But again, you would have basically the month of January, how it would go was everything started at zero. And then the first couple of weekends, you'd have a few trickle in.
Yeah.
And then like that third weekend, not what would have been this past Sunday, but the previous Sunday, you'd have a bunch on Sunday or Monday coming off the visits where they'd get committed. And then that week would be really busy. And by signing day, you'd have a few major ones. But this whole idea of a guy, and I don't follow it very much, but I'll hear on the radio somebody will say, well, this guy was a Miami commitment, and now he's being recruited heavily by this and this. That sort of element was a lot rarer back then. And, you know, and who cares? I think everybody now, it seems like, sort of knows that a commitment isn't really necessarily a commitment for some guys.
The only ones that it seems to definitely lock in for are the guys every year, every class, every school has that Pied Piper kid who is one of the top rated recruits, and he goes out and he's working for these guys because now they all see each other across the country at all these all-star games in these camps.
And that was less too.
Right.
You didn't have, and again, I follow it very sketchily right now, but you'll sort of hear of guys saying, yeah, this, and I talked to so-and-so. The players, this was pre-cell phones, you know, and this was pre-Twitter and pre-texting. You didn't talk to as many of them who said, yeah, I spoke to this guy and this guy and this guy on Wednesday, you know, because they were using landlines.
Right.
And
well, back then, the big cottage industry was in illegal calling cards, if you recall. College days, like in the 80s. I don't know what the scam is now.
Right.
But that was the big one back in the 80s.
When I was doing it, if you called guys, you'd get them on, you know, you couldn't text guys back then because there was, you know.
That had not been invented yet, yes.
So I can remember calling when I was covering Javon Kearse going to Florida, who was not a mega recruit. He was a recruit who came along sort of late in the process. I can recall him calling me back. I paged him, and he called me back from a payphone. And he was in Fort Myers, if memory serves. But his family didn't have a phone. I mean, he was not from a great environment. I can remember calling him on a pager, or a beep or whatever it was, him calling me back. Yeah, I'm going to Florida, you know. So it was a little bit different just in terms of the communication. I can't imagine now how much more easy in one sense to be able to text the kid or direct message him on Twitter, but how much more that they are inundated with just phone calls this time of year from media, friends. I mean,
oh, no doubt,
it's
got to
be chaotic. I can't even imagine what they go through.
Yeah, and some of them probably block a lot of it out and don't deal with it. Some of them probably love it, and other ones are probably overwhelmed by it. And in part, that's why some of them probably commit early, just to get people off of their back, whether they're going to stick with it or not.
Chase Goodbread, who followed me on recruiting at the paper, and I did it for a long time. I'm sure
no one can follow you, John.
Well, I did recruiting for 4 or 5 years, and I was covering Florida, and I handed it off to Chase. And I saw him at the Senior Bowl a few weeks back. He's now covering college football for NFL.com. And we were talking about recruiting a little bit, and I said, how much did it change? And he said, John, you have no idea. Just what a different beast it was to try to cover as the message boards got going and as Twitter and social media happened. It makes it fun for the fan. It's a blast, I'm sure. But
you're a lot more plugged in.
I wouldn't go back and do it again.
I hear you. And obviously, we don't talk a lot of college football. We don't talk much of anything on this show outside of the Jags and the NFL at large. But we understand that signing day is important to a lot of people in our listening audience. So as some of the big names may announce.
It's a unique day. When you're talking about news starts happening, these press conferences start happening at 9, and it runs till 4 or 5 in the afternoon, it's a unique day.
If there are some notes that we could pass along over the next couple hours, we'll certainly aim to do that. Our signing day is about 5 weeks away. We call it NFL free agency. That's the signing day I most look forward to as well. Interestingly enough, this Super Bowl, now I don't know if they were going with ESPN rankings or Rivals rankings or Scout or whomever, but no 5-star high school prospects played in the Super Bowl this year. So all those guys, Tom Brady, Richard Sherman, Marshawn Lynch, name all the best players out there, Rob Gronkowski, none of them got a 5-star rating out of high school, which just goes to show
striking.
You that you can still put together a pretty good team with apparently with 3- and 4-star players.
Yeah,
and a world championship and team.
It speaks most of all, of course, to how these guys develop between the ages of about 20 and 23 when they really grow into themselves.
What kind of coaching they get.
Yeah, and it's in a lot of ways a late developing sport. You're a different athlete at 18 than you are at 23. Bigger. Again, you grow into yourself. And a lot of guys who can do it when they're 18 at a certain weight, size, and strength, it changes a lot when by the time you're 23 or 24 years old.
Yeah, and I imagine that's certainly not the case every year when you talk about the Super Bowl, but I thought it was interesting.
I'll bet it's a lot.
There were only four stars among the 44 starters.
See,
in the Super Bowl.
I find, what are they going? You're telling me that only four of those 106 players.
No, the starters.
Oh, just the starters.
The 44 people who started in those main units, offense and defense,
okay,
for the Super Bowl teams. Of those 44.
There were four stars.
There were four stars. There were 43 stars and below, and no five-star players.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And obviously.
Well, when you consider the two quarterbacks,
the
Tom Brady was what, a two-star athlete,
right,
coming out? Russell Wilson.
I get that.
Was the same kind of way.
But you figure somewhere in that mix, one of these guys would have been, at least I would suspect,
sure,
that would be the case, but wasn't the case, obviously. Today, we'll talk about a lot of Jaguar-related stuff with you, John, including a lot of going over what Shad Khan had to say to myself and to various other guys like Ryan O'Halloran and Brent Martineau last week out in Phoenix, Arizona, about the future of the Jaguars, his expectations for 2015 and beyond as far as that goes. And I know you got a chance while we were away to talk with Greg Olson a little bit, and you've got coming up today on Jaguars.com Live, what, Kelly Skipper, new running backs,
yes,
coach?
At 1 o'clock on Jaguars.com Live.
So, and that'll air on Jaguars.com, John, for those who don't know.
Jaguars.com Live. Jaguars.com, JAGUARS.com.
That is correct, sir. And tomorrow there'll be some press conferences to introduce these guys on a more widespread basis to the local media and therefore you, the fans out there. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. If you want to get in, talk Jaguar football, talk about the NFL in general, maybe even a little bit of signing day. 641-1010 is the number. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday, just getting started on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Metro Rooter brings you the show every Wednesday. John Osher's like, that doesn't sound right. Is that right? Is that really what I thought Wild West Guns and Gold sponsored every day? That's
I'll put it this
Monday
way.
Sponsor.
If I'm off my game, you'll know why.
Well, that's understandable.
I mean, I'm used to a little firepower. I'm used to a little.
Once Loggeman figured out who was the Monday sponsor, he said, there's no, I'm not doing Tuesday anymore.
And obviously, you're not going to stand up to Jeff. So,
oh, I'm not.
I get it. I'll just take whatever day you bring.
I'm not standing up to anybody much of anything, including yourself.
If you have to have a credo in life, that's a good one.
I'm a pushover. Here, let me sit down.
I'm not
down
standing
for
up
you
to anybody. All right.
Well, that's kind of what we do. We sit around for a couple hours and we run our gums talking sports and then we go home. And hope we get to come back the next day.
It's a good gig if you can get it.
It is a fantastic gig if you can get it. A couple of updates. Tyler Devitt's passing along to me right now as DeAndre Francois. Or is that Frank Coas, Tony? That was one of the all-time.
Frank Coas.
We got to tell.
Ricky Jean Frank Coas.
You know Ricky Jean Francois, who's he play for? Is he the Packers? Who did he end up with in the NFL?
I don't know.
The LSU defensive lineman, right? Brent Beard. We don't have Brent on very much anymore because we're not doing the college corner thing these days, obviously. But Brent goes, Mike, help me out with this one. Is it Ricky Jean Francois? That was just one of the best of all times. There, Brent, I'll go with Francois on that one. Not 100% sure, but I'm going to go with Francois. DeAndre Francois had wavered in his commitment to Florida State, apparently signs his letter of intent after considering Florida. Kyle Loxley, they were going to sign three quarterbacks in Tallahassee. Apparently Kyle Loxley flips to Texas.
Yep.
And that official signing will come later on today. Marcus Lewis, a four-star defensive back recruit, chose Florida State as well over what I saw reported as Miami and Kentucky, among the others. And at one point, I think may have been a Florida commit a ways back, In the process.
Maybe. DeAndre Johnson already on campus for Florida State, by the way, the First Coast quarterback. He's already enrolled, so he'll be participating in the spring. We'll see if that gives him a head up with everything that's going to be going on, the turnover at that quarterback position at Florida State this year.
Coming out of the National Football League, DeQuell Jackson, who says he had no bearing on Deflategate. He was the one who intercepted the ball, obviously, in the AFC title game, and then passed along to the ball boy, and now we find out that it's GM Ryan Grigson that had put the NFL on alert about the deflated footballs. DeQuell Jackson is now accused of punching a pizza delivery worker over a parking spot, according to ABC 7 in Washington, D.C. Oh, you know.
How good was the spot? I mean,
well, I'm guessing it was like right next to the handicap spot.
What's with these guys and pizza delivery, man? You can't tip NFL athletes.
Roy Williams was notorious for not tipping the pizza guy.
You didn't know you were supposed to, right?
Is that what it was?
Didn't he ask one in traffic?
It can be pretty important. I'm not going to fist fight you over it, I don't think.
I'm not defending it. I'm just saying parking.
I mean, and legitimately, Jackson could have been to the right. It could have been like in an apartment complex, and he parked in a residence-only space.
I don't know that you're in the right to punch a guy.
I didn't say up. I'm just saying in the right side of the argument. And I'm not saying you're in the right to assault the
man. You've already said you're not going to confront him, period.
I'm just going to sit here and hope someone else deals with it. That's where I'm going to go.
Now, if Loggeman took your spot, then forget it.
Oh, I'd give it to him gladly. Yeah, I would paint over my name for him. we used to, at Flagler College back in the day, it's gotten so big now. Like, the campus is, I don't know, it's 10 times the size because it's all spread out. Everything was on the one city block right there on King Street. And so you'd sit in the breezeway, and everyone knew what that was, like the one spot where it's a little tunnel, a little walkway tunnel. And if you ordered a pizza, that's where you sat and wait for it. So, you know, Friday, Saturday nights after being out and you're hungry, you might order a pizza. You might have been known to order a pizza. And then when they go, pizza for Jones, whatever, and nobody claims it, then they'll sell it to you for half price. We may have done that a few times and sat around waiting.
I can see that.
Hoping we're the ones that get in on that $5 pizza.
I can see that U-turning it. I can see that being your whole Saturday.
That was like we planned it out. Right. You know what? We know what we're going to do tonight, guys. Half off pizza.
On Monday, if you say, what'd you do this weekend? That's what you told him.
That's right. That's what I did. And then if he said, no, you're going to pay double, I would just sit there and take it and hand him the money. Thank you, sir. May I have my pizza now? Shad Khan, last week, chatting it up with the Jaguar contingent out there, Brent Martineau. Representing CBS 47 at Fox 30, Ryan O'Halloran with the Florida Times Union, and several of us from 1010XL were on the scene out in Phoenix, Arizona, and Shad carved out some time for each of us to talk with him, and came away with, I thought, a lot of interesting little nuggets. In no particular order, I'll start with the London experiment. You know, he said it doesn't have all the final figures now, but it was very successful, once again, compared to the first year where they raved about. You know, they're basically able to get two games worth of monetary return on the one game, a typical monetary return. And before I could almost finish the question, he jumped to answer it. I said, how would you characterize if you had an opportunity to extend it right now? Would you say you would look at it? Would you be tentatively leaning to doing it? Would you be eager? He said eager. You know, clearly, I think right now, this is me talking. If they could sign a 20-year deal to do one game a year for the next 20 years, I think you'd take it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't know about 20 years, but I do know he said the same thing when we were in London in November, that absolutely he would talk to the league, whatever had to happen to extend the agreement, he would be all for it. He clearly likes the idea of one game a year in London in lockstep with the home schedule in Jacksonville as that being the way to have an international presence. I don't think he sees any negative to it. He knows it helps here locally. It helps with local revenue. It gives you that foot internationally, and all the stats about the Jaguars' profile being up internationally is good. You know, so I think from his perspective, it's sort of a no-brainer to do the one game in London. And again, I don't think he's going to come out and say, hey, 20 years.
I don't either.
But for the foreseeable future, I think he likes the idea, and I think it's something that's going to happen.
I think as soon as he's allowed to, he'll sign a new four-year commitment, sure, though, to do the same kind of thing, which to me is a good thing, mm-hmm, for Jacksonville. And I understand the arguments on the other side. I'm never going to change some people's minds, no, and that's fine. But the thing that impressed me or was impressed upon me by Shad, everything he said, and in talking with Brent and Ryan after the fact as well, because we all asked some different variations of questions, was the continued focus on the commitment to this city, mm-hmm, in such a variety of manners, right, as well. He said, look, we're already seeing, I asked him for some specifics on where we're seeing a financial benefit. He goes, I'm going to leave that up to the people who can explain it a little bit better, but there has absolutely been a financial benefit to the London series. But he talked about, you know, the excitement of a world-class practice bubble. Mm-hmm. You know, he likes his toys. There's no question about that. We see the yachts. We see the clothes he wears. Hey, you earn the money, man. Make yourself happy.
Right.
You see he sunk a lot of money into stadium improvements as well, and the city has as well. And I think, you know, he wants to, you know, Tony and I kind of half-joking think, you know, 50 years from now, will Jacksonville be Conville? Can this guy make that kind of, can he be the one of the most significant individuals in the history of this municipality? I think he can if he can complete the vision that he's already forming.
Well, again, if you like the Jaguars in Jacksonville, then you need to like them one game a year in London for right now, because it is helping right now the stability of this franchise here. Every time Mark Lamping talks about this, every time Shad Khan talks about it, that's what they talk about. And at the same time, they also talk about the overall commitment to the city of Jacksonville. So it's in lockstep with what's going on here. It's going to be the reality for the next 2 years. And if Shad has his way, which usually happens, it's going to be a part of something. I'd, you know, for the next 2 or 3 years after that, my guess is you're talking at least that. And again, if you want this franchise to be stable, which no question, if you look at it from the time they took over to right now, I think anybody would argue that except for what's gone on the field, everything that they've been able to control from a business standpoint are taking significant steps forward, significant steps towards stability. And to them, London's a part of it. So that's the vision.
No, I totally agree with you. And, you know, the shipyard development, things like that, that all these things may not be done overnight.
Right.
You know, he talked about upgrading the premium suites, mm-hmm, here at the stadium. But he said that's more of a project for 2016, but it's in the works.
Sure.
So we're not going to see, I don't think, as many dramatic improvements. Certainly, when you put the scoreboards in, it's going to be tough to have something as dramatic. Absolutely.
Right. But everything, you know, if you look at it on a week-to-week basis, maybe you don't see it. But again, if you start when he took over the team, the locker room, the video boards, the talk about the shipyards, the talk about everything is about building a stronger, more stable structure. And I think he said, with the exception of getting more wins on the field, which is obviously the thing that everybody wants, everybody notices, everything that they're doing is going in the right direction. And I don't put words in his mouth, but has been a unqualified success. But the thing in the NFL that's hard to control because it's so competitive, you can control what you do on the business side. You can control what you do in the stands and all that. It's harder to control the competitive product because you've got 32 other teams competing. But they are working toward that and getting that caught up with everything else that's going on.
I think one of the things that probably caught a lot of people's ear last week and is the focus of the fan feedback spotlight today. If you just saw the Twitter question, you might not understand the context.
Mm-hmm.
Shad said last week, when it comes to an amount of wins for Gus Bradley to be secure in his job, he said it is go time in terms, mm-hmm, of winning right now. But he will not put a mandate on a number saying you must win 6, you must win 8, you must win 10, whatever that number is. And I get it. He doesn't want to box himself into a corner because circumstances can,
right,
you might say, well, you know what? They might have been a 10-win team and they had this rash of injuries, mm-hmm, and they ended up with 8. So they didn't reach your mandate. Are you going to stick by what you said? He said there's no specific mandate. He's not saying Gus has to do X, Y, and Z, but he is expecting more immediately. He's not looking to wait around. We're going to talk about that, mm-hmm, coming up here in a second. We asked folks today, that may be Shad Khan's point of view, but you as a Jaguar fan, what do you mandate of your head coach in order to determine whether 2015 is successful in your eyes, your individual eyes, and everyone's going to have a bit of a different approach on that. Share your thoughts on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at John Osier, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, and also on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Tony, what do you got?
Really quickly, just updating what's going on with signing day. Trinity Christian right here in Jacksonville, big-time linebacker Jeffrey Holland was down to Auburn in Florida. Muschamp gets another one. He has decided he is going to Auburn to play his school.
Let's get Jeff Prosser on, see how he feels about that.
Yeah.
he seemed to be enjoying Muschamp's antics. I don't know what he expects him to do. He's working for Auburn now, okay? He's going to bring him in to Auburn. That's the school he's recruiting for.
I hope Jeff's not driving. Maybe just going off the road.
He probably is. You knuckleheads and other things he's probably calling us right now. By the way, Tyler passed on Jimmy Smith's son, Trey, apparently signed with Louisville. So there you go.
Get him.
Pretty good bloodlines right there. And congrats to him. Really congrats to all these kids. Congrats to their parents, okay, who don't have to pay anything for college. You know what? What you were going to pay, you can give them a nice little stipend if you can afford it to get them through on a month-to-month basis.
Or you can keep it for yourself.
Or you can keep it for yourself and add it to the retirement fund or the vacation fund or whatever you want to do with that kind of stuff. But you don't know. If just keep yourself a good academic standing, even if you never play it down, what it's like to not have student loans if you go to college, it is a wonderful thing, I would imagine. I don't know, but I would imagine. The alternative wasn't as pleasant. So if nothing else, you got that going for you.
You paid it off fast on your big radio salary.
No question. I didn't drag that over a 10-year period or anything like that, John. What is your mandate, folks? 641-1010. Shad Khan says there's no number on the Jaguars. I know a lot of people are saying enough of this building nonsense, 4-3, and we had 2 wins a year before that, even though it was part of this regime. We've had enough of the losing. You need to produce some W's. What is your mandate for Gus Bradley in 2015? Share your thoughts at 641-1010. We'll get into what we think Shad Khan will accept from Gus Bradley. That's coming up next on a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Happy National Signing Day. I hope it's a happy National Signing Day for you, depending on who you root for.
I know it's not a happy National Signing Day for you.
You have a rooting interest. Who's your college rooting interest?
Yeah.
You care?
I don't really. I mean, my son's become a South Carolina fan, so I sort of follow them a little bit, and but he's not hardcore about it. I don't really.
Tony's a Vandy fan. You know what they call
Florida, but I covered Eddie George's kid.
You know what they call National Signing Day in Nashville? Called Wednesday.
That's right, baby. We just signed Eddie George's kid. He's coming to Vandy. I don't know anything about him except he plays running back and he's Eddie George's kid.
Is it a boy or a girl?
Boy.
I don't know. I don't know what quality. I don't know what Vandy's pulling these days.
It is signing day, buddy.
Yeah, well, hey, like a girl, Tony. Like a girl's taking on a whole new meaning. Hashtag like a girl means done as well as it can be done, okay? Mm-hmm. Represent. I got a lot of nieces out there. I don't have any daughters that I know of.
I'm fine with the Like a Girl campaign thing, by the way. I'm cool with that. I will say this about it. You're not taking away from me how funny it was in the Sandlot when that little fat freckle kid told the other kid, you play ball like a girl. That will forever be funny to me, and I don't care how many Like a Girl campaigns we have. It's fantastic stuff.
He's drawing his line.
This is his line in the sand. Everybody's got one. This is his.
That's it.
This is where he's laying down his gauntlet.
Right. You're like that little kid in the commercial. Do you feel like you're making fun of girls? Maybe. Are you making fun of your sister? No.
I don't have a sister.
Then get that distinction. So you're okay with that. That's fine. We can all agree that's better than dead kids in the Nationwide commercial.
Oh, my God.
I saw an editorial about this yesterday saying Nationwide is getting exactly what they want. Because everyone's talking about Nationwide. I don't know. Does this mean you're more likely to run out? Hey, I need some insurance against my kid having a horrible accident. Let me go to that Nationwide because they sure know how to put a scare into us.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was something.
Yeah. John is refraining from comment.
Well, I mean, it was.
On the Nationwide ad. yeah, I am.
Have we called out Irish Jag yet?
What's wrong with Irish Jaguar now? What's wrong with him this time? What did he say this time?
Who tips the pizza guy?
Yeah, who tips the pizza guy?
That was his tweet?
Is this an Irish thing? That was his tweet. Hashtag Jaguars today. Don't soil our reputation with that. I tip the pizza guy.
I do too.
I tend to over tip If the service stinks, I don't stiff anyone. I don't know if I've ever stiffed anyone completely on a tip, no matter how bad it is. But there were a couple in Phoenix, Tony, that were begging for it.
It was bad. I think Super Bowl night we ordered a couple pizzas, and you know we had whatever deal it was, so it came out to like $15 for the pizzas, and I gave them 20.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, just keep it, whatever. It's
Super you're rolling
Bowl.
He's got the Fat Tony show now.
No,
he's
my
Fat
thought
Tuesday.
Was, my thought was, and it, I didn't know
I'll
that the person was interested in watching the Super Bowl, right? But they're driving to my house during the Super Bowl. To me, that would be a big sacrifice.
Right.
So I'm like, nah, I don't need a dollar.
Well, having
to
delivered
that,
pizzas
it.
In college, let the record show that the Ozone tips pizza guys very, very well.
There you go. That's the address you want to get locked in on, you pizza delivery people. Tyler passing along. Courtesy of David Hickox of 904 Preps at Sandalwood. Defensive back Jay Irvine has made it official. He's going to be an Oregon State Beaver. So congrats to him. And like we said, every other kid out there getting a shot at a free education. Hope you take advantage of it. The mandate. Shad Khan says there's no mandate in terms of a number of wins, but I don't think every fan out there feels the same.
No, and they should. You know, fans should have a mandate in their mind that they want to win. You know, more games. Fans should want to get to the playoffs. I think from Shad's perspective, my guess is deep down, he wants to see this team continue to improve each year because he knows where they were when this bunch took over. And I think as long as he legitimately at the end of each year sees the roster better, the team better and more competitive, if it keeps going in that he wants to make sure that he doesn't say, oh, we need to get X number of wins. And then if he sees improvement and sees the graph still going up, all of a sudden he's backed himself into a corner. What's the good in that?
Sure. So, but at the same time, I do think he's got to see an improvement in wins. You can't.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be hard to swallow for Jaguar fans to go 3-13 and say, yeah, but they're better this year. They're more competitive. They're in more games. I
would agree with that.
You got, you know, and I don't know what the number is, but 3 is not it. That to me to be in an acceptable range.
I think that's fair.
Let's go to the phones and welcome in Jerome, first caller today on Jaguars today, 641-1010, the number. Good morning, Jerome. How are you?
Good morning. How y'all doing this morning?
Good, man. What's up?
I just want to say about Coach Bradley. I think his back is against the wall. I think he has to at least win more than 5 games. And I think I just got a question for y'all too concerning him. Do you think the problem is that he's lacking the offensive mentality to coach the team on the offensive side of the ball? Because I look at these experienced coaches that were in the playoffs. They're offensive minded also, but they're also defensive minded too, to a certain extent. They can cover both offense and defense, and it just seems like Gus is just mainly on the defensive side of the ball, and that he doesn't. I mean, I don't know how much he has his fingers in on the offensive side, but it just I just don't know if the offense is ever going to make it with him being at the head. You know what I mean?
All right.
I think we
got you. All right. Let us comment on that, Jerome, if we could. I think it's prevalent, in my opinion, John, and you've been around the NFL. You tell me if I'm wrong. I think it's prevalent that a head coach typically focuses more, if he's going to focus, they got to be the CEO of the whole thing, but there'll be more of a focus towards one side of the football. I don't think there's any question. Rex Ryan was more hands-on with the defense in New York than he was with the offense. But
well, you usually come out of an area, so that's the perception. I'm not around Seattle. Pete Carroll's reputation was as a very good defensive coordinator.
Sure.
But I don't really get the impression from observing Seattle that Pete is in every defensive meeting, masterminding
no,
every defense.
No, I don't get that either.
Or even that he's in that more often than others. I mean, you know, I know I was around the Colts when Tony Dungy, who was a very good defensive coach, for most of that 6 or 7 years, he was not in more defensive meetings than he was offensive meetings. Now, there were times after 44-17 out here, Dungy was in the defensive meeting the next week. But for the most part, he stayed at the CEO level, and it was perceived because he was a defensive coach that he was coaching the defense, not true as much as the perception was. So I'd imagine that's the case most places.
And that may be the case, but I think as well what goes along with that is that you're less likely to – you're more likely to hire a guy with expertise on the opposite side of the football and let him go, right? Then you are – particularly if you come in as a defense coordinator, that's all you've been doing for several years. You haven't been a head coach running an offense. I mean, clearly, Bill Belichick, Pete Carroll – if Pete Carroll wants him to run the ball on the 1 yard line, Pete Carroll is smart enough to know what he wants and demand what he wants. Mm-hmm. He is the head coach. But as a general rule of thumb, I think they're more inclined to stay out of their offense coordinator's way if they are that guy. And you can have a lot of success doing that. I don't think that's,
To answer the caller's question, I think this past season, it wasn't so much mindset. It wasn't that Gus wasn't paying attention to the offense. It was, again, the fact that you had a rookie quarterback and these guys were not at the level yet to be better offensively. I don't think it was a case of a mindset or a commitment to one side of the ball or the other or anything to do with coaching as much as, you know, you had essentially a rookie offense.
Sorry, I lost my train of thought.
I think that was the question. I think that was the...
You're more likely to answer the actual question than I am, so I'll take your word.
Every once in a while, Mike, you got to throw the listener a bone.
Let's go to Steve up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good morning, fellas.
What's up?
Well, first I want to say I feel like for him to keep his job, we need to be one of those teams towards the end of the season that's in the playoff hunt.
In the mix, now, right?
Yeah. Now, John, I'm going to have to disagree with you. I feel like it's just as much as the coaching as the rookie players. I only say that because you had to fire Jed and you fired some of the coaches there. Now, Gus, you had 2 Senior Bowls. If they have another good draft, that's 3 good draft grades. Then I feel like this past season, some players was underused. Example, Tyman. He showed it to me. He showed it the last couple of games of the season. To me, he outbeat Tobin, in my eyes. Then just the fact that you hired Doug Marrone as an assistant coach, to me, I feel like that was like, I need help with coaching. And then
But I think if you have that mindset, you're going to hire only guys who are more inexperienced than you are. Right. I mean, I think to me that shows that he's not afraid to have a guy who has had control of a team, you know, coming in. I'd be more concerned if Gus would say, no, Doug Marrone's off the list because I'm afraid then I'm going to have a guy in house who has some head coaching experience. And you know what?
Was he supposed to hire a lesser coach? I'm not sure what he was supposed to do in that situation. He went after the best coach he could find for the offensive line. Now, I mean, I do think he wanted to improve the offensive line without question, but I mean, you give a former head coach an assistant head coach title in part out of respect, in part out of, you know, so that person is not taking a huge demotion when he comes to your staff.
In terms of perception.
Yeah. I mean, and so I think that I don't attach much in terms of how it's going to be run structurally within an organization. Oh, boy, this coach has an assistant head coach title. That means he's all of a sudden, in terms of power, he's a 7 instead of a 5. I don't think it goes that far. I think it's more if Gus Bradley can't be available, you know, for a week, if there's a sickness, if there's an emergency, would Doug Marrone, you know, run meetings? Yeah, I think it's a good possibility. But does it mean that he... Oh my goodness, I can't coach. I need somebody who can. I think that's a reach.
Right. You're going to have somebody coaching all these units anyway. Why not get a guy who, by everyone we've talked to in Buffalo, and it's been a handful of people, said, you know what, no matter what you feel about Marrone personally, the way he left, he can coach and he can particularly coach the offensive line. It was his greatest area of interest, they felt, on a day-to-day basis where his expertise lay. So, you know, that's what you want, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, and again, I get that people sort of want to overthink titles because it's what they see, but that, you know, again, he wanted a strong offensive line coach who could get these young guys playing at a level and I would have respect in the room. And I think it's what Doug Marrone is.
Signing day update for you. Tyler passing us along. Terry Beckner Jr., the number two player in the ESPN 300, number one ranked defensive tackle, committed to Missouri. Was also considering Florida State, Ohio State, and Auburn. And apparently they gave him a big, everybody in the student section wore his number when he went for his official visit to Missouri, and they were all chanting his name at the basketball game. And a lot of people felt they had made a strong impression. It was probably down to Florida State and Missouri. Missouri wins the day on Terry Beckner.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history is presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Who's the only guy to win Rookie of the Year and Player of the Year on his side of the football in the same season, at least as far as I'm aware? Who you got?
Dickerson?
No. Tony, who you got?
Rookie of the Year and Player of the Year?
Player of the Year on his side of the football.
Lawrence Taylor?
That is correct, sir. Happy birthday.
I was going to say Fred
Lawrence
Lynn.
Lawrence Taylor. Well, no.
Who was the rookie's MVP, right?
Ichiro also won MVP later, and Valenzuela won Cy Young, so kind of the same as a rookie.
I saw following baseball that time, Ichiro.
Yes, Fred Lynn did win that in, give me the year, please.
75.
That is correct, sir. So there you have it. And the Angels then ended up, remember when they had the four, they all signed with free agents, they had the four, well, Don Baylor was an Angel MVP, but they had Carew and Reggie. And so it was like the 73, 75, 77, and 79 MVPs all in the Angels.
And they were good?
They were very good.
Yeah, 82, right? The Angels were good.
They were very good. They were good throughout kind of the mid-80s.
Yeah.
And then they faded. This is a baseball we speak of for those of you out there who are really in your little foxhole.
I followed a little baseball back in the day.
LT won three MVP awards, Player of the Year awards on defense, won the National Football League MVP as well in 1986. I don't know who was giving out Player of the Year, but there's so many organizations. Put it this way, still regarded as probably the greatest linebacker of all time. Everyone says he changed the game, all this stuff. Probably a shock to many people that he is still alive to this day with the way he cavorted and carried on and abused his body. But he made it, and he's still around. Yeah. Happy birthday, Lawrence Taylor.
And boy, was he good.
This date in football history, presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry on Gate Parkway. If you're in the market for a family dentist or you need cosmetic work done, call 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
The Tennessee Titans are expected to announce former Pittsburgh Steelers defensive coordinator Dick LeBeau for a position with the Titans staff soon. Titans head coach Ken Wisenhunt has a relationship with LeBeau from their time together on the Steelers staff, so Blake Bortles could be facing a LeBeau-esque defense four times a year in the very near future. The league has announced that Cleveland Browns wide receiver Josh Gordon will be suspended for at least a year after his latest violation of the league's substance abuse policy. With no renegotiations in sight this year, which is what got him back on the field last year when he did, Josh Gordon is officially in the NFL player status limbo. And now Cleveland sports radio hosts will deal with the same questions we have had for the last year and a half regarding the status of Justin Blackmon. When can he be reinstated? What does he have to do to be reinstated? And the answer to all your questions are, we don't really know.
He has to apply.
Right.
That's the primary thing he has
I'm drawing
to do.
A blank. What's the other Dick LeBeau defense?
That would be Pittsburgh.
Yeah, they don't play him twice a year, Tony.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. I'm going to go with the flow because Tony is clearly more.
You know why? Because it's not 1999.
Right.
The coaching tree. All right. Better LeBeau, right. Dick, or the little French guy from Hogan's Heroes? Who you got? what do you got? Those are the only two LeBeaus I know that
I'll
can think
I'll say Dick
of.
LeBeau because it's a Jaguars today, and we play him seven times a year.
And we do have him on the schedule every week.
All those LeBeau teams.
There's that. We don't hear about the LeBeau, the other LeBeau. I don't even know his first name. But Hogan's
Pepe
Heroes.
Pepe LeBeau.
Classic. I don't think it was Pepe. I don't think it was Pepe LeBeau. I would say Hogan's Heroes probably in my wife's all-time top five sitcoms. Wouldn't make mine, but I enjoyed Hogan's Heroes.
That's a... That's an interesting get for a.
I know my wife, but yeah, you know, cool. So I know I don't know if it's cool or not. It may be stupid, but that's what she likes. Favorite sitcom of all time for John Osier.
Is Curb Your Enthusiasm a sitcom?
Sure, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that it's yeah.
And I've watched a few episodes, but is that it's still sick? Is it not?
It's a sitcom. It's an HBO sitcom. So
was it a half hour?
It was.
All right, that's
it was, and it's a situational comedy.
Yeah, I think it's got to be a half hour show.
If you count Curb, I got to go Curb.
All right. I'm a Seinfeld guy, probably.
I mean Seinfeld. Curb is Seinfeld on HBO.
My kid watches Seinfeld.
Steroids.
I won't let my son, he's 10, I won't let him watch every episode of Seinfeld. You know, there's some that he doesn't need to see yet. But most of them are okay, because a lot of the jokes go right over his head. He's not quite sure what he's laughing at sometimes, but he thinks it's the funniest stuff. So I think he has a pretty good sense of humor, because
I like news radio back in the day. I thought it was great. And Parks and Rec.
News radio. Great, okay. Right? News radio was one with Phil Hartman on
it.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Yeah. Parks and Rec is good.
First three or four episodes. I mean, first three or four seasons of 30 Rock was really good.
I think 30 Rock is still good.
Yeah.
There are a lot of good ones out there. I heard Dan and Jeff talking about MASH yesterday, because Jeff said, you know, it's amazing when you think back. They had 109 million or whatever the number was. You watch the final episode. When you think of how many people there were, that was close to 50% of the people in the United States at the time.
I watched the last episode.
I did too.
Because I have to.
Remember the one before that?
We had like two channels, so it wasn't really.
We had like four. Stop it. We had ABC, NBC, CBS, and whatever PBS station you could pick up.
I watched it trying to get it. The rabbit ears right over
when
on.
When I moved to Florida, in Connecticut, we had three stations plus PBS, which was, I think, seven. And we moved to Florida, and I got two PBS stations. I got PBS and then some, like, independent station out of Orlando. I was like, what is this? Changing the landscape of television as we know it.
The big landscape. And people in Jacksonville remember this when Cablevision back in the day had the box where you had to push the little lighted lever back and forth. You had 36 stations, started 2 to 36.
Okay.
And it was a cord coming out of the back of the TV. That's what cable was, because it was a cable.
Yeah.
And there was no remote, but you got this cord, and you had to, it was like the old phones where the phone lines was connected to the wall. And you always had to pull around the Cablevision box. It was brown and white and had this little lighted lever, went back and forth and 2, 3. And you had to push past 3, 4, 5, 6 on the dial. And MTV was 27 when MTV came out.
Oh,
that was the big.
We wore 27 out, didn't you, John?
Wore it out. But the old Cablevision boxes.
Yeah. You're all about it back in the day.
Stray Cats.
No question. Awesome. Oh, Stray Cats were strutting all over your television screen. All right, we'll take a time out. I tell you what, let's do this. Let's get a phone call in, actually, before we break, and then we'll take more on the other side. 641-1010. Had a statement from Bill Belichick on why he didn't call timeout, right? And it was very interesting. If they run the ball in there, or they complete that pass with 20 seconds left,
sure,
game's over. Oh, just about. I mean, there's a slight percent chance that New England could have done something to get into at least attempt a field goal to tie it up at that point. And we'd all be wondering, why didn't Belichick save the time? He gave an explanation. We'll go through that a little bit later on today. Let's get John in before we break, though. 641-1010. If you're on the line, stay right there. We'll get to you coming up. Hi, John. How are you?
Hey, doing pretty good. So I want to talk about free agency a little bit. It seems like, you know, people in Jacksonville now are all excited about free agency. But if you look at the past couple of years, the Dolphins, the Bucks, the winner of free agency, hardly ever even make the playoffs. So my thought was, why don't we wait a year, do some patchwork free agency, make sure we have our quarterback first, and then if we think Bortles is the guy, go big time next year. Because my concern, if we go this year and Bortles turns out to be Gabbert, we're going to be in trouble because we'll have to develop a new quarterback, and it just won't work out. I want to get
right, but in that scenario, why wouldn't you want to already have more good players on your team? If they're available now, and the free agent class is good now, and you have the cap space now, and let's say you signed, I don't know, Jason Pierre-Paul and Brian Bulaga, for instance, and they were your marquee guys that you signed.
Who are both young enough to still be good.
I think they're
in
both 25, 26, right?
Mainly because their plan was this all along. They were going to come in, regardless of the quarterback. In the NFL, you can't say regardless of the quarterback because it's always the quarterback. But their plan was to come in, get a couple of draft classes, see where they were strong, see where they were weak, lay a base, if you will. And then at that point, have the cap money to fill in the areas where you're obviously weak. And in year three was the year that they were going to use free agency to fill the spots in their roster. So this is that offseason.
Right. I don't think you can – you've got to hope And again, as an organization,
it's not trying to rebuild the roster this offseason with free agency. It's trying to supplement what you've already built. You've got Brandon Lindy. You've got guys who you think are going to be good players for you now out of these draft classes. So now what haven't you been able to fill? Well, now some of these drafted guys are 24, 25, 23, and then you add some 25, 26, 27-year-olds with them, and then you start having some guys that you can foresee having for the next 2 or 3 years who are all good players, and you're not developing everybody on your roster.
Greg Olson is correct when he says it's all about Blake Bortles and his development. But you can't sit there, in my opinion, as a GM or a head coach. I mean, a head coach might not have another year to go. GM might have a little bit longer rope. But you can't sit there and say, well, you know, we think he's good, but let's wait one more year. You right. can't. You got to go for it at some point. You got to hope you're right. And if you're not, well, you're all going to lose your jobs eventually, right? And it's going to get blown up. But you've got your commitment, your conviction is that he is the right guy. So to sit around for another year and mm-hmm. wait, then what? Because what? Okay, yes, we signed these guys in free agency. Well, next year, is it going to be any better if we have to start over at quarterback and go sign some guys next year? You're still going to need right. players along
and
the way.
And I still think you have to be smart. I still think you still don't want to just have a you don't want to go on the internet and print out the top 10 at every position and say, okay, we didn't get 1, 2, 3, 4. Now let's get 5. You still have to be smart and make sure these guys are the right fit. And you have to have the conviction to pass on a name if he's not the right fit.
Well, clearly, but you have your own, whatever.
It's harder to do than it sounds.
The top 10 list that is somebody will print on the internet is their opinion, and it will somewhat overlap with Dave Caldwell's lists.
Right.
But whatever his top 10 list is, I hope he is going, you know, here's our number one guy. If we don't get him, let's get the number two guy. Or we're going to go out and try to sign 3 top guys. Let's go after 1, 2, and 3.
That list needs to stop at some point.
Sure it does. In terms of big money, but I think all those guys come with a descending amount of investment that you're willing to give to them.
But there is a point where all of a sudden you've reached that point where that guy's not going to help. And you want to stop there.
Obviously. But I think there are more than 10 guys out there in free agency that could help this football team.
At particular positions.
Okay. Granted.
Because if you look at some of these positions, the pool runs out very quickly.
Understood. Obviously, no one's advocating throwing money at bad players just to sign players.
It's been done.
Well, no one's advocating it. Right. I mean, I don't even think those teams would have advocated. I don't think those teams would have said, well, we're signing bad players.
Right, but that's where you have to be smart and free agents.
All right, we got to take a
time
out.
Harder than it sounds.
We'll come back. 641-1010. More of your calls straight ahead. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars Today continues in a moment on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Wednesdays on Jaguars Today brought to you by our friends at Metro Rooter. For all size plumbing jobs, in-home, commercial, even industrial plumbing, septic systems, restaurant, grease trap service, you name it. If it has to do with plumbing, Metro Rooter are the folks with the solution. Same day service, weekends included, the right people with the right equipment serving you here in Jacksonville and beyond. And I can speak for that, at least down in St. Johns County, since 1978. MetroRooter.com is the website, and the number is 695-1911 for our Wednesday sponsor here on Jaguars Today, Metro Rooter. Today, fan feedback spotlight asking you, what's your mandate for Gus Bradley? Shad Khan said there wasn't a win total mandate. He said it is winning time. It's time to go. It's go time. But he's not going to say he has to win 6. He has to win 8. He's not going to put that number. And you can understand that. He's smart. You don't, the circumstances can change. You could have a crippling wave of injuries that no one could expect you to overcome. You might have been on your way to seemingly a winning season and have that happen with a couple months ago. And, you know, so he's leaving himself some wiggle room. But we ask you today as Jaguar fans, tweet us or post on Facebook or give us a phone call. What is your mandate for Gus Bradley? For you to be satisfied as a Jaguar fan, whether that's a win total, whether that's a certain degree of improvement, I'm seeing a lot of have this team in the mix, have this team still mathematically alive when they reach December. And that is one thing you give Jack Del Rio credit. He did more often than not. Had him in at least mathematically alive. Wasn't always all that realistic that they'd make it into the postseason, but...
Yeah, what you want, I mean, what you want is to have people having fun talking about the Jaguars on Mondays in December. I mean, and
maybe we need to switch up the Monday host.
Well, that,
kidding, John.
That would be a start.
I'm kidding.
Be a start. And it's a co-host. You're the host.
No, you're the whatever. We're co-hosts.
But it's you want to have some sort of hope, some sort of fun in December. You want to be walking around Christmas shopping, thinking that the Jags have a chance.
Maybe I was talking about me as well. Maybe it would be you at Fat Tony on Mondays.
I think that was implied. I mean, it's been discussed.
I understand that. I work at your pleasure. That's how that works out. Let's go to Will up next. 641-1010. The phone number. Will, welcome to Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
How you guys doing? And we can't get rid of the host. Come on, you're the man. But listen, there's no mandate. This is business. And I mean, it's easy mathematics to me, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. As a GM and as a head coach, first off, when you came into the mess that those guys came into, that was what you call a cleansing. Only thing getting you more clean than that is prayer. So that they cleaned the whole roster. In saying that, you're not on the clock until you pick that quarterback. That quarterback is your on-the-field CEO or what have you. So once you have him, now we have to teach him what we're going to do in our company. This is what we wanted out of our company, blase, blase. Okay, you had that. That was the rookie year. Good job. You might not have had these great statistics, Peyton Manning didn't, but we've seen spotlights of what we can expect of you on to come. Now, in saying that, this year is the year. It's not a mandate, but you have to be in the midst, not in the midst of the playoffs. You have to be in the midst of the games. You can't have no blowout games. You got to show us that this team is on the rise, and that don't take win percentage. I mean, totals, I'm sorry. That takes what you put out there and show on the field. And I think that we have a great owner in Khan. He's very patient, and he's sticking to the plan. If we had someone like Jared Jones or Snyder or one of those guys in here, they're just, no, you can't just spend money when you're trying to build a great foundation. And I think that they're doing it, and I see us being in the midst of being a Seattle team, not the next year, but about another 2 years from down the line. We're going to be one of those young teams with a lot of picks from out of the Senior Bowl and things of that nature that's upcoming and going to be in the playoffs years to come. And I love the show, guys. Thanks.
All right, Will, thank you.
Well said.
The thing with that, though, is you've got a young foundation. Solid is great. Spectacular is needed, though, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to hit to that level, if you're going to be, and ultimately that's the goal. It's not just, hey, let's occasionally make the playoffs,
sure. Because
it's been a while. It's let's consistently challenge for the playoffs, and let's make some deep runs in the playoffs. You don't have to do it every year. You don't have to get to the Super Bowl every year. But, you know, Seattle hits on Russell Wilson in the third round. It doesn't matter what round they took him. They hit on a quarterback, okay, mm-hmm. who can play at a very high level, despite some people. We have got to tell the Jake Plummer story, Tony. I think it's the only. Have you told it yet?
I have not. No.
Oh, we got to tell the Jake Plummer story when it comes to Russell Wilson. We'll do that coming up here in a minute. Richard Sherman, you know, superstar. Earl Thomas, first round pick, Pro Bowler, you know, perennial Pro Bowler. Cam Chancellor, that whole secondary. They've hit on star-level mm-hmm. players, and then they have gone out, and they've signed a Cliff Averill and a Michael Bennett. And, yes, they've lost some guys along the way, but they've been willing to go out there. And Marshawn Lynch, who they traded for a while back now, has turned into a superstar among running backs for the most part. So they've got 6 to 8 guys who are among the best players at their position. They don't have them necessarily at wide receiver, where a lot of teams do in today's game, but they've got enough that they've got enough difference makers, and that's the question. Will enough of these Jaguar players that are seen now as the core, and that will include this year's additions, be at that level?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think the answer is unknown at this point in time.
It's absolutely unknown, and that's the primary number one storyline of the next year, year and a half, 2 years.
No, it really is. And when you talk about these young guys developing into difference makers, a lot of people are talking about Seattle and how young that roster is. New England just won the Super Bowl with the youngest roster in the history of the Super Bowl. They have the youngest roster to win a Super Bowl in NFL history with an average age of something like 25 years old. And that's with Tom Brady and Darrelle Revis and some of those guys in there too. There's not one way to do it. is the point. It's not just you tear it all down to try to build it up.
Is the now established way if you've got a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, if you've got a 36, 37-year-old quarterback, then it's relatively common to have a very young roster around. The Colts did that with Manning for years.
You have to, expense-wise,
right.
Practically.
Sure. And that, if you guys have talked about it, that will be the fascinating thing with the Seahawks and Wilson, obviously, is, you know, he's probably not that top three quarterback that you want to completely tear down the rest of your roster to build around. So if you're going to pay him like that, then all of a sudden what happens to the rest of your roster? You know, that'll ultimately be the judge of how he's judged over the next, you know, 7, 12
sure.
years.
And if he keeps doing what Brady does, which is get a big contract and every year say, all right, I'll defer it. I'll defer it. I'll take a bonus. I'll do whatever I need to do to make sure we still have enough money to spend it everywhere else that we need to keep this team competitive, which is what Tom Brady does renegotiating every offseason right now.
Yeah, and they still, though, have enough to go out and pay Darrell Revis huge money. Even if it's a one year window, right? Because they're in a championship window. They feel every single year, and despite
and they
all
will
that,
be until Brady retires.
Right, you would think, right? As long as that combination of head coach
Ron
and
Rogers
quarterback
is there, they're
are
in a championship
there.
Window.
Exactly.
Yeah, one of those three or four guys, you're always in a championship.
And that's the thing about the Patriots, though. They've been in that window. Several others have been in that window. They're the one now that it's been over a long period of time, but they've produce six trips to the Super Bowl and four championships. Mm-hmm. So they're even for the teams. Is Tom Brady that much better than Aaron Rodgers, if he is at all? Or is he's certainly more accomplished than Aaron mm-hmm. Rodgers, right? And that you got to give him credit for being a better postseason quarterback. I don't think we're picking sides. I don't know if anybody's picking Tom Brady over Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
If they have
that'll
the
be what's
pick.
Interesting about Rodgers, and I think Rodgers is the best quarterback in the league. But now you will be in a situation with Rodgers next year where people start saying, Aaron Rodgers, but he's only won one. You're just about to that point with him. And that's too bad.
Which is a compliment of sorts, right? Because you're so good and so much is expected of you. We want to put you in the pantheon of maybe one of the top 10 quarterbacks of all time when it's all said and done.
Right, but you're going to start hearing that about him now.
Absolutely.
And, again, I'm not one who thinks that you measure quarterbacks only by rings. But that's what you're going to start hearing about with him.
Pete Prisco famously considers Russell Wilson a game manager. I don't know, famous. Well, a lot of people do. Doing shows with Maurice Jones-Drew last week, he said there are about five or six what he calls game-changer quarterbacks in the NFL, and they're the usual suspects that you would think. Manning, Brady, Rodgers, Breeze, Luck, and Roethlisberger. I think he narrowed his list down. He said everybody else is a game manager in the NFL, in his opinion. So we're sitting there last Thursday night. We go out to dinner, Frank texts us, hey, me and Prisco are over at, Dan Marley's bar in downtown Phoenix. So we mosey over there. And at some point in the night, it's Tony, it's me, it's Lauren Brooks, Brent Martineau. I don't know if he was there yet. Jason Dixon, former program director at 1010. Gary Davenport, who writes for Bleacher Report. Frank and Pete. And Pete's sitting right next to me, and Jake Plummer's in the place, and he looks exactly like he looked when he played, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the hair, I mean, just, if you
he's got the beach bum thing going.
Pete loves him some Jake Plummer now, too.
Well, let me tell you what, that night, Plummer had a few dozen, okay? And he comes over, and I don't know how it got started, but Tony, fill in any of the blanks I may be missing. The bottom line was,
I don't know, Pete said something to him, like, he was walking towards the exit. He was done for the night, Plummer was. And Pete said something to him. I couldn't hear what it was. It was really loud in there. But it got Plummer's attention.
Plummer wanted to go to bat for Russell Wilson and tell him, you're out of your freaking mind. Russell Wilson is a great quarterback. And it went along the line. And I mean, I'm just standing here, and right over my shoulder, here's drunk Jake Plummer just yelling in Prisco's face about, you a-hole. I played 10 years in the league. You have no idea what you're talking about. You know, Pete, I don't care. You know,
Pete
if
was
you wrote,
laughing.
I don't care. I'll tell Einstein about physics. You know, it doesn't end.
I've seen that scene a few times.
Right. But it was tremendous because
it is tremendous.
Plummer was so animated, and he called him an a-hole at least twice, I'm pretty sure.
Joined the club.
Was just screaming, though, at the top
of
his
table,
lungs.
He was like, I played in this league for 10 years. It was so great.
As if to remind everyone, hey, who's this guy?
Right.
He's still hanging around.
He was a cool dude. Like, he came around Radio Row. Plummer did. No handler, no anything like that. It was just like anyone who had a microphone could come up and get him for 2 minutes. It was kind of neat.
Yeah, he was chilling, but he was enjoying himself on the Phoenix scene last Thursday night.
I bet you guys were too.
Oh, are you kidding me? We shut it down. He couldn't hang with us. He left Marley's long before closing time. I don't know where he went, but I don't think it was to hang out with Warren Sapp, and it wasn't hanging out with us because we closed it down a couple nights last week. Absolutely. 641-1010 if you want to get in. Fan feedback spotlight today. We'll take a look at some of your responses. What is your mandate as a fan for Gus Bradley for this team's performance in 2015? And it's going to be a big topic of conversation, I think, this all season. John Clayton told me last week, hey, Jaguar fans need to understand it's not coming in 2015. 2016's your year. Well, a lot of fans out there saying, we've waited long enough. I don't care what your rebuilding plan is. Bottom line is, you're asking us to pay NFL rates. We want some NFL wins, and I understand that point of view, and that's your prerogative. So share those thoughts with us. We'll get to some of those coming up next on Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, latest from signing day, as expected, Apopka's Martez Ivey announces, I believe it's official now, who'll go become a Florida Gator.
Thank goodness they can put those.
Now, Prosser's cool with that, right?
Championship.
Prosser's good with that one, right?
I guess.
Okay.
I guess, or maybe.
Because he might be passed out.
Maybe must.
He's pretty emotional.
He's good enough for Auburn.
I mean, I'm not a Gator fan, but I would have loved to have seen what happened on Twitter and on the air this afternoon if Ivey had not decided Florida was where he was. They were pretty sure on that one with everything else that had already happened this morning with all these defects to Auburn. But if they had lost Ivey too, I think Gator Nation would have lost.
What if they lost Ivey to Auburn and Muschamp at some event involved?
Oh.
Be fantastic. But hey, as we all know, they only want the ones that they got, according to some.
That's everybody, man.
Is that right? Look, guys, get away. I don't think that anyone, Florida State fan, I wanted Byron Coward. I didn't think he was coming. I said, wanted him. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Supposed to be the best player in the country.
He didn't come here. We didn't need him. That's great.
We could use him.
We don't need that guy.
I'm not going to play that game. We can take him. We'll take him right now in Tallahassee. If that letter of intent is not signed, we'll take him right now.
And just do me a favor, everyone out there who does follow recruiting, don't be the grown man who starts tweeting an 18-year-old about the decision he made today, for good or bad. Leave it alone. He's 18. He doesn't know what he wants to eat. He doesn't know what he wants to do. He doesn't know anything yet. You don't need to be the 50-year-old man that's tweeting him that you made the biggest mistake of your life.
I don't read too many of the message boards, but I'll read War Chant, you know, because I keep up with Florida State recruiting, and more just from a fan perspective. And, you know, the whole thing with Byron Coward, it was all cool when he was playing games when you thought you had a really good shot at him, and then when it looked like you didn't have a shot, you're like, well, this just shows his true character. Come on. Don't be that guy. Do not be that guy.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, let's get a couple calls in, then we'll read you some of the responses you sent along in terms of whether or not there's a mandate, what your personal mandate is for Gus Bradley to deem 2015 successful in your eyes. Let's go to Garrett up next here on 1010XL. Hi, Garrett. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. What's up?
I think I'm in the minority, but my personal opinion is, as long as we're competitive this year, I'm not really expecting much. If we could get five, six wins, I'd be happy with that. But the next season, 2016, my patience will be gone. If, like you said, if we're not at least mathematically involved in the playoffs at some point.
Okay. All right. So for you, it's competitive. I would argue that they were competitive more often than not this year. Not every single week. But maybe he's talking about more consistently. Look, you're going to have a game or two.
Sure.
When you get handled. Just about, I mean, unless you're having an historic season in the National Football League.
I've seen some tweets where it's like, no losses by more than 10. I mean, that's going to happen. You're going to be trailing by 3 and you're going to get, but
even if not, you're occasionally going to get handled. You're going to get worked on a given day.
And that's going to happen. I think what people mean, obviously, is more games where you're competitive, obviously more wins. And, you know, the eye test tells you if you're more competitive. And they were certainly more competitive this year. And I don't think anybody around here expects them to be less competitive than they were last year.
Let's get Mike up next on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I was going to mention, yeah, I mean, I think for this coming year, I want to see progress, development, touchdowns, wins. But at the same time, think about it. We played a Super Bowl champs this year, so, you know, maybe we can go out there and hit them in the mouth, you know. So let's show that maybe we can pull off the upset of the year.
Up in Foxborough next year, you mean? Say again, Mike?
Yeah, something in Foxborough, you know, something to keep in mind, keep us motivated, you know.
All right, I got. I don't think that's something.
Let's beat the Patriots, sure.
Yeah, I mean that'd be nice too.
Yeah.
Well, let's beat as many as we can. But I don't think certainly that's in the NFL. You don't have that circle this one. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, look, you're gonna. You may have those games, but it's not like, hey, guys, this is really what our season's all about. In college, when you're an overmatched program or whatever, you're up and coming, and you've got that one big.
Sure.
You know, school that's way above your head and you're playing them. Maybe you do. You say, hey, wow, this is a great chance to make a statement. But the NFL, you shouldn't be making those kind of statements, right? I mean, not like that. A win, you shouldn't get so much out of one feel good win, in my opinion. You know, they all count the same for the most part in the standings. Division games, obviously, a little bit more, but you got my point. You know, it's not like something Gus is going to circle the Patriot game in the preseason.
No, it's all a perspective thing, too. Like, if you're New England, and you know your team is really good when you see those games on the schedule against, I mean, last year it was Denver or whoever, you're like, yeah, this is a litmus test for us to see where we are at this point in the season, knowing we're going up against one of the best teams and that we're probably going to see them again when it comes time, or this is a game that's going to decide home field advantage. For those types of teams, you can circle those kind of dates.
Sure.
You don't ignore anything else, but you circle those kind of games. When you're in the position that Jacksonville is, you don't approach it that way. It's let's find a way to win this one
right, and
worry about what happens when we get to New England.
And quite frankly, the good teams all operate that way.
Yeah.
Sure.
And you don't try to play the game 2 or 3 weeks ahead. All right, today we asked you in light of Jaguar owner Shad Khan saying last week that there is no mandate on Gus Bradley to produce a specific amount of wins in 2015, although he did state it's winning time. We got to win now. We asked you today the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day. What do you mandate from Gus Bradley in 2015 to be satisfied as a Jaguar fan? And we got a ton of response. Tony, give us a sample.
Here's what we got from @IrishJaguar. Significant progress. The record won't necessarily reflect progress, though. From Nick, improvement. The wins are coming. Be patient. # glass overflowing. # I believe in Gus. From Jag in Flight, I'd say 7 wins and competitive in all others. Otherwise, I'm a # blame it on the crown. From Drew, 7 to 8 wins, clear continued development of young players. Players support Gus as head coach. From Ronald, the team has to play meaningful games in December. From Avaro, we got win 9 games, baby. No more BS, rookies, etc., or get fired, resign, please. Back to +500. From Eric, it's simple for me. I need more wins. In the 6 to 8 range, have to improve there. From Brian, no home losses to division opponents and 50-50 against the rest of the field. From Duval Doom, 6 wins, no losses by more than 10, 1 blowout win, 20 points in meaningful football in December. From Hardy Brothers, we got at least 7 wins or top 15 ranked offense. Interesting. From Ocho Ficho, win in September, no long losing skids, no more Senior Bowls. From Brian, Gus needs to win 6, no major blowouts, at least 1 big upset, Jags over Pats, and a London win. From Christoph, how about winning the division, stealing a win from the Colts, and destroying the Titans and Texans?
I'll rip through a few of these we got on the Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars today. Jose said, better than the last 2 years. Well, whatever that, I mean, you can look at that in a number of ways, but that was his. Mike Peterson said, 5 to 8 wins would be acceptable, still building towards the future. Almost there. We must keep Gus through the hard times. I hope he's our coach for the next 10 years at least. Keith said 500 or better, no less, or Gus should be replaced. So, you know, completely opposite kind of opinions there. Jedi, I believe is how you pronounce it, said 8 and 8. Bill went with at least 9 and 7. Billy Cantor, 7 or 8, no less. A lot of people going around that 7 win mark. Zachary said, we have a ton of money in improving players. 8 wins is good to me. You know, you hear that, 9 and 7 or no less than that. That's a big jump. That's a 6-game jump in the standings. Not unprecedented. Can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Love to see. I certainly think it can happen, but to say that that's the hard line in the sand, Boy.
Well, again, I think that's why Shad's not saying it's a hard line.
Correct.
Because realistically, if you get to, I'm just going to throw out a number, if you get to seven and feel like you're, you know, the caller mentioned division games or the comment mentioned division games, and you've fared well in the division, you pushed the Colts realistically, which you didn't do the last few years, and you're 3-1 against the others, and you feel like you're on solid ground, and you haven't gotten 8-8, and you're 7-9, and so you've drawn this line in the sand and said, well, that's it. I mean, that's clearly that's not what you do. So that's why he is approaching it this way.
A little NFL news for you right here, as you know, there's some discussion in the last couple weeks about could Joseph Randle be the heir apparent to DeMarco Murray. They like his talent in Dallas. What did he get arrested for? Something ridiculous.
Shoplifting
this year.
Underwear.
Shoplifting underwear. Exactly.
What kind of underwear? I mean,
good underwear. Oh, it was good underwear. Yeah. So DeMarco Murray's a free agent. A lot of thought. You know, do you want to break the bank on a running back? They've got that great offensive line. Could anybody get it done? Well, Joseph Randle arrested this morning now for domestic violence, something significantly more serious. Also found marijuana in its hotel room in Wichita, Kansas.
Didn't Randle also get a sponsorship deal from an underwear company after the crime?
He did get a sponsorship from an underwear dealership. I doubt he's going to get any sponsorships out of this particular double dip as far as that goes. So, I was asked the other day as we were, speaking of, you know, where would you get a sponsorship for the ladder there? I guess Colorado and Washington would be your best bets if you're going to get that. But I was asked as I was in the airport in Colorado, I was asked by a certain someone I was talking to on the phone, so do they have any specialty shops there? You know, do they have anything unique?
Right.
And I saw Lauren Brooks is in the airport with me. I'm like, I'm being asked, are there any of those unique to Colorado shops, right? And she goes, oh, yeah. I saw one right down here. And I'm like, really? You can get like sweatshirts and you can get all these different things that say Colorado and Denver. I'm like,
Lauren, it's not this kind of shop.
Not what we're thinking of, Lauren. Lauren's just pure as the driven snow, though, and she doesn't think like I do on that score. That does it for us today, Johnny. On today, Jaguars.com Live, who do you have coming up?
Kelly Skipper.
1 o'clock?
1 o'clock, and be good to talk to him. We haven't talked to him yet. We talked to Greg Olson last week on that show. So it'll be interesting to see his perspective as we get to know these offensive assistants a little better. So I'm looking forward to that.
And we're hoping some of these guys are going to be introduced a little more broadly at press conferences tomorrow. If that coincides with when we're on the air, we'll try to bring you some of that coverage live and talk to those guys as much as possible. I'll say tentatively you'll be back next Monday on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday.